organizers, both here and at the University of Waterloo. So it's a pleasure to be here. The title of the talk, as was said, is K3 Modular Parameterization and Calabi-Yau Threefold Moduli. The talk itself will split roughly into two halves, according to the title. And what we're really going to be talking about today is a story inspired directly by the D equal 8 F theory heterotic string duality between heterotic string on elliptic curves and F theory on elliptically fibered K3s with section. Okay. However, you will not see the physics today. This is a mathematical story I'm going to tell. And in some sense, you can think of it as generalizing from elliptic curves to elliptic K3 surfaces. And generalizing just about everything about elliptic curves to elliptic K3 surfaces with section. We will not be working with generic elliptically fibered K3 surfaces with section, but very specific ones which have enhanced algebraic structure, known as lattice polarized K3s, and the lattice polarization, or rather the lattice that does the polarization, will be very specific. This is a formalization of the notion of, say, thinking of a K3 surface as a relative elliptic curve. For those who are physicists, string theorists in particular, you might think in terms of the stringy cosmic string story from a couple decades back, where your K3 was interpreted as a generic elliptically fibered K3 with section. You have 24 I1 nodal curve singular fibers. But that's the generic story. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at cases where those fibers have collided into interesting Kadaira-type fibers, giving you interesting gauge behavior. That's going to be the basic structure and background. So today we're going to see two things. First, it'll be how to build K3 surface generalizations of the famous Weierstrass elliptic, Weierstrass normal forms. Or elliptic curves. And secondly, we're going to talk about applications of this. So to apply this to Calabi-Yau threefolds. But now, whereas the K3 surface was viewed as a relative elliptic curve, now our Calabi-Yau threefold will be viewed as a relative K3, or if you prefer, iteratively or hereditarily fibered Calabi-Yau threefold by elliptically fibered K3s. So as relative K3 surfaces. Okay. Specifically, to answer questions about Calabi-Yau threefold moduli. Okay. So let me give a lightning review of the elliptic curve story. So Weierstrass normal form for elliptic curves. Well, you present the elliptic curve as a cubic curve in CP2, y squared z minus 4x cubed plus g2xz squared plus g3z cubed equals 0, with g2 and g3 complex numbers. And they can be zero, but the discriminant, delta, defined to be g2 cubed minus 27 g3 squared, must be non-zero. Now, this is not a unique assignment to every elliptic curve defined over the complex numbers to one of these Weierstrass normal form algebraic curves. But in fact, if you think of g2 and g3 as a weighted projective point in the weighted projective line with weights 2 and 3, then this classifies the elliptic curve E up to isomorphism. So what you get from this is a nice, what's called a coarse moduli space for complex elliptic curves. I'll denote it script M. So it's just the set of pairs G2, G3 in weighted projective 2, 3. Subject to the only constraint being that the discriminant be non-zero. So so such that delta is non-zero. Okay? Now, this is somehow the algebraic picture. The transcendental picture, or the Hodge theoretic picture, is that periods of the holomorphic one form on these elliptic curves take value in the upper half plane, or rather the ratio of periods do. So the classifying space for periods for an elliptic curve over C is given by the upper half plane, but quotiented by identification of isomorphism, which in this case is by the discrete group gamma. Gamma is just PSL to Z. Okay, so it's these 2x2 matrices, integer entries, determinant 1, but you also have to quotient by plus or minus the identity because the action is trivial on the objects we care about. Now, what's the relationship between this transcendental or Hodge theoretic story and this purely algebraic story? Well, it's given by the so-called period mapping. And the period mapping goes from our coarse moduli space to our classifying space. And it can be given explicitly. Now, the trick is you don't give it explicitly that way. You give it explicitly that way. So you go period map inverse is equal to, well, it's 60 times something called E4 and 140 times something called E6, where E4 and E6 are the Eisenstein series of weights 4 and 6, respectively. Okay? So these are actually modular quantities. Okay? These are modular forms with respect to the group PSL2Z. Now, suppose you want to generalize this to K3 surfaces. So what are, I'll catch it later, analogs of the Weierstrass normal form? Well, okay, in order to understand the question, we have to ask ourselves, what are the K3 generalizations of elliptic curves? Because there's not just one, okay? So a K3 surface, Hodge theoretically has this Hodge diamond of type. So, okay, generalizing the Hodge diamond for an elliptic curve of type 1, 1, 1, 1. So topologically, there's no distinction between K3s, in fact, algebraic K3s versus non-algebraic K3s. They're all diffeomorphic, okay? So you might say from a certain standpoint that there is no distinction from one to another. What distinguishes one K3 from another is this question of algebraicity, okay? Whether the K3 surface admits, well, you could say a Kähler structure, but let's just say an algebraic structure. And you can stratify the amount of algebraic, you can titrate the amount of algebraic structure in a K3 surface. So if you let X be an algebraic K3 surface over the complex numbers, then you look at the algebraic curves on your K3. And the algebraic curves generate the so-called Neron-Severi lattice. Now, the algebraic curves are giving you classes right in the middle of the Hodge diamond. Okay? Now, they're not going to fill it out in general, but they'll fill out some sublattice of the integral cohomology, a second integral cohomology. So this Neron-Severi of K3 is a sublattice of the K3 lattice. I said all the K3s were topologically the same. In fact, the middle dimensional cohomology together with the intersection form will give you the lattice of type H plus H plus H plus E8 plus E8, where these E8s are the negative definite E8 lattice. And the H's are just the lattice 0, 1, 1, 0, even unimodule or mixed signature. Well, they don't necessarily, right? So the question is, how algebraic is your K3? If you're asking, do there exist K3 surfaces that are as algebraic as possible, so that the Neron-Severi lattice fills it out. Well, no, certainly not. You can ask me later. Yeah, I mean, the right notion of the Hodge conjecture here is called the Kugisatake Hodge conjecture. It's not going to fill out this, but it can fill out that, the H11 part. Those are the max. No. Picard number can be 20.
No, no, yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Right?
Sorry.
Okay, so let me just clarify. H11, right, has size 20, right, as a complex, say, vector space, or even integer lattice, right? It's 20, okay? You can't fill out all of H11 in general for a K3. If you take a generic polarized K3 surface, its Picard number is 1. So the algebraic part is just a single ray of lattice points in H11, right? But what I'm talking about is that there's a range of possibilities. You can have a, let me give the examples, and you'll see. You can have a K3 that's slightly algebraic, one that's pretty well algebraic, and one that's very algebraic. Okay, there's a whole game here. So in fact, if you let M be any even lattice of signature 1 L minus 1 with L greater than 0, then we say an M polarization on X is a primitive lattice embedding from M into the narrow and severe lattice of X. So if I say a K3 surface X is polarized by a single class, say, of square 4, right? This would be what's called typically a 4-polarized K3. The lattice M being just rank 1 generated by a vector of square 4, okay? If this is the case, then the 4-polarized K3s are just going to be the smooth quartic hypersurfaces in CP3. Okay, so those are the K3s we typically think of. Now, this is not to say that the algebraic part, the narrow and severe, of any smooth quartic hypersurface is of rank 1. Right? In fact, there's going to be a dense set of those with higher ranks. Okay, there's this rank jump phenomenon that happens ubiquitously in the context of K3 moduli. But if you're characterizing, shall we say, the moduli space, if I specify M to be rank 1, square 4, then I've specified a 19-dimensional moduli space of 4 polarized K3s. That's the way to think about it, okay? So this coarse moduli space, M pole, okay, is the coarse moduli space for equivalence classes of pairs MI, okay? And you have both global Torelli theorems, which says that periods determine the algebraic K3 up to isomorphism, and you have surjectivity of the period mapping, which says that the period domain is hit by K3s of this class. In the elliptic curve case, the period domain was merely the upper half plane. In this case, the period domain is a type 4 symmetric domain. If, depending upon the lattice polarization type, you can reproduce the upper half plane as one case, you can reproduce products of two upper half planes, you can reproduce the Ziegler upper half space. These are all possibilities that happen in K3 moduli. Okay, but beyond that, it becomes quite different. Okay, so I've indicated how the 4 polarization works. Okay, what about the 2 polarization? If I have a single class of square 2, and its span is the polarizing class for K3. This is not even a sophisticated question about lattice polarization. It's just a question about polarized K3s. What is a geometrical realization of said K3s? You all know, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Okay, so the answer is 4 polarized K3s are smooth hypersurfaces in CP3. 2 polarized K3s are double covers of CP2 branched over a sextic. Okay, so this is a second classical construction of K3 surfaces. But that's just polarizing by a class, a single class. That would be like saying that the narrow and severe rank is generically 1. Obviously, we have a lot more room. We can get all the way up to 20. Okay. So how do these M polarizations arise for, say, quartics? Okay, what is it that makes a quartic special enough to have an enhanced algebraic structure? And there's generally two sources. Well, I'll give three sources. One of them is symmetry. Okay. Another would be singularities. And I'll save the third for after I explain these two. So symmetry. Example of this would be the Fermat quartic. So the Fermat quartic K3, x to the fourth plus y to the fourth plus z to the fourth plus w to the fourth equals 0. Okay. This is visibly highly symmetric. This is extremely familiar to Philip and Zenia. Z mod 4z squared x. Okay, you can send x to lambda x, y to mu y, and z to lambda inverse mu inverse z. Okay? It's not a difficult computation to see that due to the nature of that action and the structure of the relevant K3 lattices, the Nerenceveri rank, the rank of the lattice polarization, jumps all the way from 1, which would be generic for a quartic, to 20. Okay? So we get the rank of Nerenceveri equal 20. So it's maximal, okay, for the Fermat quartic K3. So symmetry is one source. What about singularities? Well, you could have singularities of ADE type, and the resolution of an ADE type singularity gives you chains of rational curves, and these rational curves represent classes that are now algebraic, and you just check their lattice span. Okay, so especially ADE singularities upon minimal resolution yield contributions to Nerenceveri of X, specifically the ADE type sublattices get added by each minimal resolution. Okay, but there is another way. And so the other, oh, now my erasers are up high. Look at that. Okay. So the other way is to take advantage of this diagram. So suppose you actually have an elliptic vibration structure with section on your K3. So now your K3 itself is not, in some sense, singular necessarily, but it has some internal structure. And to take advantage of this internal structure, you define the notion of an elliptic K3 with section to be a triple consisting of your K3 surface, your fibration, your map down to P1 with fibers generically smooth elliptic curves, and the section of that. So the section is actually sitting inside K3. It's the image of that arrow going up from P1. So S is a smooth rational curve giving you the section of phi. So what is the corresponding lattice polarization? Well, the answer is rather clean, and you've already seen the lattice. I've only shown you how many lattices? I've shown you 2. I've shown you 4. I've shown you E8. It's not E8. And I've shown you H, okay, which has rank 2. So the corresponding lattice polarization is actually polarization by H. Okay? Now, the moduli space of H-polarized K3s, well, the dimension of the moduli space of lattice-polarized K3s is complementary to the size of the lattice, meaning the rank of the lattice, in the sense that it's 20 minus that rank. So H is 2, so the dimension of this, complex dimension of this moduli space, is actually 18. Okay. And what is the generic geometrical representative here? Well, I said before, a generic elliptically fibered K3 surface with section has 24 nodal singularities. Okay? Now, it's important to note that these nodal singularities here do not contribute to the lattice. They're all in the same algebraic equivalence class as the smooth fiber. Okay? But the fiber and the section are enough to generate H, not in these coordinates. It's an exercise to figure out the right linear combination. Okay, but the game is pretty clear. You can start with a quartic, and you can specialize it either by making it more symmetric or degenerating it gently to have some ADE singularities, and you lead to a lattice enhancement. You could start with an elliptic K3 with section, and you could degenerate it by colliding the 24i1s, 24 cadaver type I1 singular fibers into more interesting fiber types, more interesting ADE types, and you will enhance the lattice polarization. Okay? You'll make your K3 more algebraic. There's actually a very systematic way to go about. Can I do it again? Yeah. A systematic way to go about doing this. And the ADE contribution, the contribution coming from the singular fibers you get by colliding these I1 type singular fibers, actually leads to a splitting of Nerin-Severi of X as H plus some other lattice WX. It's a negative definite sublattice that's generated by the classes coming from algebraic cycles that are perpendicular, because it's direct sum, to both fiber and section. Okay. And a sublattice of WX, and this is kind of an important point when you're doing computations, called the root sublattice. It's all the R in WX such that R comma R is minus 2. Okay? And it's WX root that decomposes as a direct sum of the ADE types. Okay? It's spanned by the image under the first Chern class map of the irreducible rational components of the various singular fibers. So let's specialize this now, this whole story, to a particular lattice polarization. Okay? Let's take M, and I'll sometimes be incautious with this and refer to M simply as this particular lattice, but let's set M be H plus E8 plus E8. Now this is clearly a sublattice of the K3 lattice, which was H plus H plus H plus E8 plus E8. Okay? It's a lattice of rank 18, right? So a corresponding moduli space, M polarize, has dimension over C equal to 2. So it's a step better than elliptic curves, if you like. And the question is, do you have an analog of the theory of Weierstrass normal forms for these guys? So let's go back over here and ask what our options are. If we want to, say, start with quartics, our options are to find a queerly symmetric, very special two-parameter subfamily of quartics, whose symmetry will magically give rise to this enhancement. We could do it with singularities, find some ADE singular ones, which allow the minimal resolution to be this lattice type. Or we could rig it using elliptic vibrations. And of course, if you can do it one way, you can probably do it another way by tracing through some coordinate changes. So let's do it with ADE singular quartics. And the answer, this is an old result of mine with Adrian Klinger, is that if Xi is an M-polarized K3 in this specific sense, H plus E8 plus E8, then there's a triple. A, B, D in C3, generalizing G2 and G3 in the Weierstrass case. such that X is isomorphic to the minimal resolution of the ADE singular quartics, okay, this specific one, let's use this word. So I'm going to give you an equation for a quartic hypersurface in CP3 that will not be smooth. And here it is. QM ABD is just y squared ZW minus 4x cubed Z plus 3AXZW squared plus BZD w cubed minus 1 half d z squared w squared plus w to the fourth equals 0. Okay, well, first of all, you have to ask, you know, well, why is there a d? I said it was a two-dimensional moduli space. Why is there a d? Well, why a stress normal form? Why was there G2 and G3? There's a certain redundancy. That redundancy will go away in the next step. The next step is that two such quartics, QM A1, B1, D1, and QM A2, B2, D2, are, well, yield isomorphic lattice polarized, M polarized K3 surfaces, if and only if, well, A2, B2, D2 is equal to lambda squared A1, lambda cubed B1, and lambda to the sixth D1 for some lambda and C star. Okay? So we have exactly the same story of a coarse moduli space. Now we see that the moduli space M polarized is actually triples A, B, D in weighted projective 2, 3, 6, such that, and here's the fun part, before the discriminant, which was G2 cubed minus 27 G3 squared, had to be non-zero, here the discriminant is just D itself. So it's easier. This is an easier description of a moduli space than the classical wire stress normal form moduli space is for elliptic curves. Okay, but I promised we'd build a dictionary between this description and that description, the elliptic fibration description. So let's do it here. If you think about it, the great thing about quartic surfaces, is that if you have a line on a quartic surface, you can take the family of planes passing through that line. Okay. What's the excess intersection? Well, the degree is 4 minus 1 is 3. So if you have a line on a quartic surface, you get a family of cubic curves, hence a family of elliptic curves, if you can find a section. So the trick, then, is to look carefully at the geometry of this singular surface and look for rational curves that are present on all members. And the answer here is that on QM A, B, D in CP3, there are two distinct lines. Okay, on every member here. They're x equal w equals 0 and z equal w equals 0. Okay? There's also two singular points, both of ADE type. And the points P1, which is 0, 1, 0, 0, and P2, which is 0, 0, 1, 0, are ADE type singularities with types, respectively, A11 and E6. Okay? Now, I'm not going to show you how the minimal resolutions fit together and this all builds the lattice that we're after, but at least it's plausible that you get an A11 out of this, you get an E6 out of that, you're already up to rank 17. It's not hard to imagine that you use the lines passing through these singular points to help build the full lattice. Okay? It's a bit of lattice theory there. But the great thing about it is that you have these two rational curves that are present always, so you get two elliptic fibrations out of this. Now, one of them I might call the standard fibration. Okay, and this is induced by the projection to the CP1 ZW. Okay, and that gives you an elliptic fibration whose corresponding WX is just E8 plus E8. If you prefer, what this means is that you have an elliptic fibration with two extremely bad singular fibers of Cadira type 2 star, two E8 fibers, one at 0, one at infinity over the base P1. But there's also what we might call the alternate fibration. OK, Okay, and you get this by projection to line xw. Okay, and now you get an elliptic surface that comes with not just one section, but two sections. And wx is equal to the other even unimodular lattice of rank 16. There's a classification of these. There's two of them. One is e8 plus e8. The other is usually to the d16 plus. Okay? Now, these should be eminently familiar to anyone who's studied heterotic string theory, or for that matter, the heterotic F-theory duality, or for that matter, F-theory. The reason for this, of course, is that this geometric model in the context of F-theory is going to correspond on the heterotic side to a heterotic E8, E8 model on T2. This one's going to correspond to the SO32 Munsey 2 one. Okay? Philip came up with a toric realization of these many years ago, and it's rather beautiful. It takes as its premise that the thing you ought to be doing in this story is you ought to be looking for a realization of the hypersurfaces not as some sort of special singular quartics, but as generic anticanonical hypersurfaces in toric Fano threefolds. Now, I'm not sure those are the words that Philip would have used to describe what he was doing, but he did start with a reflexive polytope of dimension 3, and he looked at slices, reflexive slices. So slices through the origin that cut out reflexive polygons. Okay? And still better, the way he sliced things, there were also projections to those slices that were torically natural in the sense that they preserved the fan structure in a nice way. So you have this whole notion of a toric anti-canonical normal form, hypersurface normal form. And we'll come back to that in a minute. But what I'd like to do next is I'd like to illustrate how the structure of the alternate fibration is somehow the key to proving the theorems I quoted with Klinger. Don't worry, I'm not going to prove anything. I know that's probably not the right thing to do in this setting. But I do want to indicate how this works. So what we're really doing here is we're somehow matching algebraic and transcendental data, but we're doing it in a very, clean way on these enhanced lattice polarized K3s. So I said that the alternate fibration has two sections. Okay, that's not to be expected in general. In fact, an elliptic fibration need not have any sections. But if you have one, which you better for F theory, it's nice that you have another. And the second section, relative to the first, defines an automorphism of the elliptic surface. And that automorphism, that self-map of the elliptic surface, is order 2. Okay, so to say it as a mathematician, I would say that the second section defines a torsion order 2 element in the Mordell-Weigh group of the first relative to the section. So if you let S prime be the second section, and sigma prime in, as I said, Mordell-Weigh phi S be our order 2 involution, order 2 automorphism, then X quotiented by sigma prime, well, I can now resolve. And I can resolve this in such a way that I, again, get a K3 surface. Okay, so I have a K3 surface X. I have an order 2 map, self-map of the K3. I quotient, I get some singularities, and turns out I get exactly 8 singularities. I resolve these minimally, and I get a K3 surface. Now, it's a K3 surface that I would really like to recognize. Not because it's won an award. No, I want it. I want to recognize it because it better be easy. Well, I need a K3 surface that should be easy. And off the top of your head, can you think of a way of passing from elliptic curves or abelian surfaces to K3 surfaces? Just the one everybody knows. The product of two elliptic curves, that's a surface, that's halfway there. What's the next thing you can do? You can quotient Right, your quotient by plus or minus one. Okay, it's the Coomer construction. So it turns out that the K3 you get is Coomer of something. But let's think about this for a second. How many moduli do I have here? What's the dimension of this moduli space? It's two. So how do you get an abelian surface that naturally has two moduli? Well, you take the product of two elliptic curves. Okay, I'm just trying to motivate. But the basic idea is this, E1 or E tau 1 cross E tau 2. Okay? Now, this is the remarkable bit, because this is now giving you a dictionary between an algebraic structure derived ultimately from the defining equation, which is no longer on the board, for the K3, okay, via this internal structure. You don't see the automorphism easily without seeing this internal fibration structure. And it's identifying it with something which is algebraically related via the group law, plus or minus the identity, right, marking the minus action here, in a product of two elliptic curves, which are associated to transcendental parameters, upper half plane period parameters in each case. So what we're going to get from this is a way of expressing A, B, and D, our algebraic parameters, in terms of quantities related to tau 1 and tau 2. So what ends up happening here is that the domain, the relevant domain, is the upper half plane cross itself. This is the period domain generalizing the upper half plane. Over here you have PSL 2z cross PSL 2z. Now that's not enough, because if you do that, then order matters, right? Coomer of a product of two elliptic curves, well, the product of two elliptic curves couldn't care less which came first, okay? So in fact, this is semi-direct product with z mod 2z, okay? And this is the classifying space. So what we're actually getting is moduli space M polarized to here. Now, what are the natural modular invariants of this thing? Well, if it were the upper half plane quotiented by gamma, quotiented by PSL 2z, the natural modular invariant would be J. Okay, it would be the J invariant, which I neglected to write down, but it would be this classical invariant J of tau equals G2 of tau over delta of tau, okay? But it's not that, and it's not even the product of those. What it is the elementary symmetric polynomials for J1 and J2, rather, J of tau 1 and J of tau 2. So you have sigma, which is defined to be no relation to that sigma prime, defined to be J of tau 1 plus J of tau 2, and you have pi, which is J of tau 1 times J of tau 2. Okay? These are the fundamental modular invariants, modular parameters, the generalizations of the J invariant for an elliptic curve. But just as J needed to be related back to the defining parameters G2 and G3 via that famous formula there, we need to make that same connection here. But now with, oops, that's my reveal. But now with A, B, and D. Okay? And the answer is extremely clean. Okay? And the answer is that A cubed over D is pi, and that B squared over D is pi minus sigma plus 1. And that's it. That's the story. Okay? It's a complete generalization of the Weierstrass normal form for the class of H plus E8 plus E8 lattice polarized K3s. Yeah? Yeah, so in fact, there's a nice quadratic equation that you get here. And in general, when you solve for J1 and J2, J of tau 1 and J of tau 2, you don't get nice rational function expressions, you get square roots, which is going to come up later in the talk. Okay? Pardon? Yes, but only by inverting through the J function. So the modular content, if you like, is somehow mediated by the J function here, which is no surprise because our K3 is related by quotienting by an involution resolving to Coomer of a product of two elliptic curves. Okay? But your question begs the really interesting generalization question, okay? Which is what happens now if you decrease the lattice polarization and thereby increase the dimension of the moduli space. So your K3s are less algebraic even than these, okay? And one can play this game, and I've done this in work with Adrian Klinger generalizing this. You can take the lattice N, which is H plus E8 plus E7. And you get a normal form that's just like the normal form before, yeah, just like this one here, except now you add one monomial deformation term, C x z squared w. That's it. That's all you do extra, okay? Which is kind of convenient because we already used D. And then the moduli space of n polarized K3s becomes quadruples, A, B, C, D, in weighted projective 2, 3, and you probably won't guess what comes here, but it's 2, 3, 5, 6. And the condition now is that C is non-zero, or D is non-zero. Okay? Now, what is the inverse of the mirror map in this, getting ahead of myself. What is the inverse of the period map in this case? Okay? Well, it's given by A, B, C, D equal. If I'd done this for A, B, D, it would involve J1 and J2, and these kind of quantities. But here, it's equal to E4, E6, 2 to the 12th times 3 to the 5th times C10, and 2 to the 12th times 3 to the 6th times C12, where E4 and E6 are Igusa's Eisenstein series for genus 2 curves and generalized Eisenstein series, and C10 and C12 are Igusa's cusp forms of weights respectively 4, 6, 10, and 12, okay? So I can just glibly write this down because when you do the hard work, you realize that not only for this lattice N, but even for another lattice, you know, further down, H plus E7 plus E7, and many more, the geometrical structure that I'm talking about here, which Klinger and I called a Van Heemansardi involution, is still present. And in these cases, when you can make a direct connection between a geometrical construction of the class of lattice polarized K3s and a corresponding a role played by curves of various high genera, you can reinterpret the K3 moduli story purely in terms of curve theory. So this is really a genus 2 curve story here. And as far as the generalization is concerned, you do get that X quotiented by another involution constructed the same way is now Kummer. But now instead of being Kummer of E1 cross E2, it's Kummer of the Jacobian of a genus 2 curve. Okay? More generally, any principally polarized abelian surface, its Kummer will be realized in this way. And obviously, taking C to be 0, you move to this other sublocus. Okay, so that's all I want to say in general at this point about this K3 story. The only other comment I want to make is that the toric anticanonical hypersurface normal form, okay, which I think was inspired by work Philip did, is most natural when viewed from the standpoint of another string duality, not heterotic F, but mirror symmetry. Because what you do here is you take a polytope, this is a different delta, oh well. This is a three-dimensional polytope, 3D reflexive polytope. And using methods of toric geometry, you associate to it a toric Fano threefold. Okay? Possibly singular, but you do a fan refinement and this thing is smooth. You then take your anticanonical hypersurfaces, and depending on how you do it, you either get X or its mirror. Okay? So there's always that concern when you're playing with reflexive polytopes, am I working with the polytope or its polar? And that's going to determine whether or not the associated Fano threefold will have anticanonical hypersurfaces isomorphic to X or isomorphic to its polar, to its mirror. And the last question we want to say here is, can we recognize the mirror pair of K3 surfaces? Well, X M polarized, M equal H plus E8 plus E8 polarized K3 has mirror, and okay, so M is a lattice of rank 18. So the dimension of the moduli space is 2. Now, under mirror symmetry for K3 surfaces, there's various reasons to interpret that as exchanging mirror pairs whose moduli spaces have complementary dimensions summing to 20. So in fact, we want X to have a mirror with a moduli space of dimension 18. And I've only written one of these down so far today. And here it is, H-polarized, K3 surface. Okay, so the mirror of the elliptically fibered K3 surfaces in the stringy cosmic string story are the M-polarized K3s. Okay, and to a certain extent, you can trade off roles of complex structure and complexified Kähler structure in playing with this story. The only other thing to mention is what are the relevant Fano threefolds, and I'll just give you one of them. The easy one is weighted projective 1146. So an anti-canonical hypersurface in weighted projective 1146 is an H-polarized K3 surface, an elliptic fibered K3 with section. All right, so what is this good for? Well, it's good for various things. Dave Morrison has used it for analyzing non-geometric heterotic compactifications and work with Momendier, some that were extending with Momendier and Klinger. It's been used to probe the bulk in moduli and under the heterotic F theory D equal 8 correspondence. But that's not what I want to talk about today. Okay? What I want to talk about today is a geometrical problem that dates back to an old classification of mine with John Morgan. So we looked at the Picard-Fuchs differential equations for families of K3 of Calabi-Yau threefolds now over the thrice punctured sphere, so over P1 minus 3 points, 0, 1, infinity. And subject to some very mild hypotheses suggested by mirror symmetry, specifically the homological mirror symmetry conjecture of Koncevich, we classified all of the integral variations of Hodge structure. Okay. In particular, if you look at the real variations of Hodge structure, it amounts to looking at this classical Picard-Fuchs differential equation of hypergeometric type, 4F3 hypergeometric type, and you get a very recognizable list of quadruples, A1, A2, A3, A4. All 1/2s, you see the various list. You have this one, which corresponds to the mirror quintic in Philip and Zenia's famous, and now I can call it a foundational paper. and you know, this list was very, very revealing because it was derived using representation theoretic methods. It had nothing to do with geometry. And it begged the question of geometric construction. Okay, this is an old problem due to Phil Griffiths of when you have a variation of Hodge structure, or for that matter, a differential equation, which is a candidate Picard-Fuchs equation, how can it be realized geometrically by an actual family of varieties? Okay, and it was not hard to run through 13 of the 14 entries in our table and find geometric constructions. I do not mean the 2-2-2-2 complete intersection of P7. I mean its mirror family. Likewise, the mirror family here. This would be the mirror of the weighted projective sextic in weighted projective 1-1-1-1-2 space. This is, of course, the mirror quintic. But by the time we got to the bottom of our list, which I warn you in our paper is the top of the list, the 14th case, we did not have a construction. Okay? And that's because when you try to perform these constructions, you end up getting certain singularities that simply cannot be dealt with and are not compatible with the mirror construction of Baturev, or any of the other mirror constructions that people were playing with. So you're left with this problem of sorting out the relationship then between a variation of Hodge structure and a geometrical construction. Okay? Now, at the time, I did what anyone who's familiar with reflexive polytopes should have done. I wrote Max Kreutzer. And Max talked to Emanuel Scheidegger, and they cooked up an example which is almost right. So what I told them was that if you look at the actual form of the hypergeometric series in this case, the form is the sum m equals 0 to infinity, 2m factorial, 12m factorial, m factorial to the fourth, 4m factorial, 6m factorial, z to the m. Okay? So if you're familiar with this game, you would guess that this should be a 2-12 complete intersection in weighted projective 1-1-1-1-4-6. Okay, but that's too singular. Turns out not to work. Okay? So I gave this to Max, and Max computed for a couple days and got back to me and said, okay, here is a reflexive polytope. In this case, again, it's going to be a five-dimensional reflexive polytope where the combinatorics seems to work out. Okay. But again, it was a complete intersection in a toric funnel fivefold, and it was just too complicated to work out the singularities to be sure that we were getting anything smooth. In fact, we were pretty sure it wasn't. Okay. So that's where it sat for quite some time. But sometime after this work with Klinger, when you return to this question, you notice the denominator takes this form 111146. Okay? And it really begs the question, is there a role to be played by 1146 in this story here? Okay? It's a very naive question. Wouldn't it be nice if there were a way to construct a K3 surface fibered Calabi-Yau threefold with the property that it would, as a threefold, the three-form variation, would realize this hypergeometric variation. Now, we know lots of things about the false step, the mistaken approach, the first approach. Okay, we had that H21 was not even one, it was three. You know, clear evidence that we were not on the right track. But, you know, there is this notion of a sublocus, and you could restrict the hypergeometric series, and at least you get the right series when you restrict to the sublocus. Okay? Well, what ends up working is this. What ends up working, do I really need this? No. Not now. Well, it still works. But what ends up working is the following. Do is you can study here. You can study so you study Calabi-Yau threefolds fiber by each polarized K3 surfaces. And the H-polarized K3 surfaces are themselves sitting as hypersurfaces in weighted projective 1146. Okay? And then you can hope, well, really engineer things, that mirror symmetry respects this vibration. Of course, this is ridiculous, okay? Stromer Gyalzazo tells you that there should be a vibration by three tori over a three sphere, and that's how you construct the mirror by doing these transforms on the torus fibers, the T2L and the torus fibers. But you can get lucky in the sense that the Bhatia-Greb formulation of mirror symmetry is purely combinatorial, okay? So if you have a situation where you have a reflexive polytope with a slice, with a projection, which extends to a founder finite, all in such a way that the compatibility flips projection and slicing under polar duality, you can actually find yourself in a situation where mirror symmetry is respected fiber-wise. That is, you will have an induced K3 surface fiber vibration on the mirror Calabi-Yau threefold, whose fibers are mirrors of the K3 fibers in the first one. Okay? So this does work, and it does work on a rather nice hypersurface model. You don't have to pass to continue intersections. So the hypersurface model is one that was studied by Frederick Deneff and a bunch of others in some of his very early work. And it looks like this. You're looking at pentagonal hypersurfaces and weighted projective 112812. Of degree 24. Okay? Now, of course, these are going to be on the small H11 side. The other side would be the small H21 side, mirror of these. You work it out and you get the H21 of mirror Calabi-Yau's is again equal to 3. And you begin to get suspicious that maybe Max wasn't so far off. Maybe there's a direct relationship between this hypersurface realization
and his complete intersection of this issue. But you simply cannot eyeball the connection between the two. It's very complicated, except for the fact that in both constructions, you can understand the structure algebraically of the K3 surfaces, surface fibers, as M polarized K3s. And why is that great? Because we have a normal form, we have the generalization of the J invariant, so we know precisely when two fibers, the same fibration or in different fibrations, both given by M polarized K3s, are isomorphic. So you use the modular parameterization data, the results we prove relating algebraic and transcendental structure for K3s, to match the two vibrations. And once you've matched the two vibrations, you see that the complete intersection model maps down to the hypersurface model as what's called a partial Krepent desingularization. So the singularities over the locus in question for the hypersurface model are actually quite bad. They're singular along a nodal rational curve. I had one of these degenerate elliptic curves. The singularity locus is not even isolated. The singularity locus up above, you then check, consists of two points. Well, this begs a question. Can we produce a small projective resolution of this, conical transition, to a locus where we no longer have H21 equal 3, we actually have H21 equal 1, so we get a weight-free Hodge structure of the right type to fulfill this 14 case. And there's good news and bad news. Okay. So the bad news first. The bad news is that you can prove that this nodal Calabi-Yau threefold is what's called factorial. Now, a factorial nodal Calabi-Yau threefold admits no projective small resolution. So that's a no-go theorem, right there. Okay? There's even strong birational equivalence results that just say this construction cannot yield such a variation. But there's good news. And the good news is that there's a result of Namakawa and Steenbrink, which says that there is a pure weight-free Hodge structure on middle dimensional cohomology for a factorial nodal Calabi-Yau threefold. So you actually do recover on a singular family, a family of singular Calabi-Yaus, the variation of Hodge structure in question. So it's sort of a good enough answer from the standpoint of algebraic geometry in that you don't really expect all variations of Hodge structure to arrive from families of smooth varieties. But you need to have a pure weight-free Hodge structure to make this happen. So I'm over, but started late, but I want to make one last comment, and this is just because the example is so cool, and at least three people in the room care about it, should care about it, myself not included. And the answer is this: it's extremely nice that we have exactly two nodes here. Okay? If you think about it, I mean, if you're familiar with constructing nodal Calabi-Yau threefolds using hypercircuses and whatnot, you usually get many more nodes. Very unusual. But what we actually have here is two nodes. They live in a single singular K3 fiber in this M-polarized K3 fibration. And the Calabi-Yau smooths. Okay, this is sort of how you're able to argue the factoriality in other ways. But the Calabi-Yau actually smooths, okay, into this free program. But the fact that they're in the same K3 fiber makes an obvious idea come to mind, which is, wait a minute, we had an alternate fibration on all M-polarized K3s. That was what gave us an involution on the M-polarized K3s. Why don't we just do it globally? It turns out that the involution can be expressed torically. Well, not quite torically, almost torically, okay? But it can be expressed globally on the Calabi-Yau threefold. And it has the effect of switching the two nodes. So what does that mean? That means you get out of this, from an M-polarized K3 fibration, a Coomer of E1 cross E2 fibered Calabi-Yau threefold family with exactly one node. And again, it's smoother. So it's also a realization of the variation. Okay? So this is just an extremely nice connection then to the naive geometric construction problem, which is, well, wait a minute, why don't we start with a family of elliptic curves over P1 here, and a family of elliptic curves over P1 here, and take, as Chad showed, their fiber product, and get a Calabi threefold that's fibered by a product of two elliptic curves, and then do a fiber Weiss-Kummer construction. But we tried that. It turns out that there is exactly one member of this one parameter family of Calabi threefolds, which admits that construction. Okay? For all of the others, when you compute the J functions, there's a non-zero quantity under that square root that we're talking about. So it cannot be forward constructed directly as this kind of fiber product, fiber Weiss-Kummer construction. But it can be deformed away from that. And that's another construction of the same family. So I'll end with two questions. The first question is, metrically, what can be said, okay, in the sense that physics cares about, and then Yao has been here at Perimeter talking about, what can be said about canonical metrics, natural metrics, on either the small resolved, non-projective Moisiessen threefolds that we're dealing with here, or for that matter, just the one-level singular cases. I mean, usually you take a local model around the node, and you just say, well, I can't do it globally, but I'll do it locally. Well, here globally, you have one node. Very, very natural question from that standpoint. Given that the intense amount of vibration, iterative vibration structures, it's quite reasonable to suspect we might be able to infer some global results on metric structures. The second question is, what about mirror symmetry? If this was an honest conifold transition, we pretty much understand how mirror symmetry and conifold transitions work, at some levels. But what do you do when you hit a factorial wall? I mean, you're just stuck. There is no geometric transition you can do when these walls with a noble Calabi threefold is factorial. You will just leave projective algebraic geometry. So the two questions are closely related. They probably are going to involve the same answer. Right? And I will leave it at that.
Questions? Because I want you to repeat a few, it will be long, so.
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay, if there are no questions, let us thank the speaker again.